in the hopes of looking more attractive and youthful. More Americans are having their noses done, faces lifted, foreheads, Botox, buttocks, liposuction, and breasts augmented. Between 2003 and 2004 alone, there was a 44% increase in the total number of cosmetic surgery procedures, according to the new book, Beauty Junkies. This examination of the cosmetic surgery industry was written by Alex Kuczynski, a reporter for the New York Times Style section. Her book is part journalism, part memoir. She's had several procedures herself. Let's start with you just running through a list of some of the procedures you've had done.
I had been a longtime user of Botox, I would say from the age of 27 to 37. I'm now 38. I had my congenitally puffy upper eyelids nipped and tucked into my eyelids so that they are a lot, my eyes are a lot brighter. I had a little liposuction on my posterior. I dabbled in collagen to fill in folds in my face that are referred to as nasolabial folds. And then I had one disastrous encounter with another filler that caused my upper lip to grow to the size of a yam. And this happened, unfortunately, while I was on the way to the funeral reception of one of my best friends, which is, he would laugh about it. At the time, I wasn't laughing about it.
Well, why did you get so much work done?
I have been writing about the subject of cosmetic surgery and the advances in dermatology since I was at the New York Observer, which was many, many years ago. And I've been at the New York Times for 9 years now. And I began to find the subject really fascinating. And in 2002, I wrote a piece about how Botox was about to be approved by the Food and Drug Administration for use to treat what dermatologists call the 11s, which are those lines, the glabellar lines between your eyebrows that look like the number 11. And the story appeared on the front page. And I got about 150 letters and emails from readers, half of whom were completely outraged, and half of whom were really eager to know where they could get their hands on this stuff. And I was fascinated by the reader response to that piece. I mean, these were New York Times readers, so this was not a group of people I sort of expected to go gaga about, you know, wrinkle treatments. And then I continued to write about the subject and wrote about deaths at the Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital during plastic surgical procedures. I wrote about a doctor in Florida who, you know, basically paralyzed and almost killed people by using his own sort of mixture of horse-grade, you know, medical botulinum toxin A to treat them with Botox.
You're underscoring here a lot of things that have gone wrong. So why did you want to do these things to yourself?
You know, the doctors I visited for my procedures, and I really only received treatment from one doctor, a woman in New York who's a plastic surgeon and a member of the board, American Board of Plastic Surgery, which is the only legitimate board concerning these doctors. And she is, you know, was very safe and very judicious with me. And I would suggest, you know, I would point to my neck and say, God, I've got rings around my neck like a tree, you know, can you get rid of those? And she would say, are you crazy? You're 32 years old, you know, we're not doing that. And she would send me away and say, no. But every time I interviewed a plastic surgeon or a dermatologist about one of these other stories, I would always at the end of the interview say, so if you were me, what's the one thing you would do? And they would all reach out, and with the soft nub of their eraser at the end of their pencil, they would pick up my upper eyelids and say, definitely bilateral upper bleph, meaning, you know, bilateral upper blepharoplasty, which is an upper eye lift.
That's really setting yourself up, though, to go to plastic surgeons and say, what would you fix about me?
I know. I mean, in the eyes of a plastic surgeon, there's something fixable on everyone.
Now, you mentioned that you first started getting Botox treatments when you were 27. And in that sense, right. You are representative of a new trend in cosmetic surgery. Because the way you describe it, more and more younger people in their 20s, are electing to have cosmetic surgery. What do you think accounts for that?
Well, plastic surgeons and cosmetic surgeons and dermatologists are very heavily pressing upon younger people the notion of prophylactic dermatology and prophylactic cosmetic surgery. You know, if you use the Botox now at 27, 28, 29, you won't form the wrinkles necessarily that we'll have to treat later. And I think they do this for a lot of reasons. I mean, it's kind of a feeder system of plastic surgery. You know, if you're doing something in your 20s and feel comfortable with it, you'll return in your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, your 60s. You know, the old model was that, you know, a 65-year-old woman would show up and have a facelift, or a porn star would show up and have her boobs augmented. But that's a very old model now. And the new model is to encourage younger people to do things and to encourage boomers to do things. So you have a really kind of explosive growth in the entire industry because people from, you know, both ends of the age population are, you know, sort of rushing towards this.
One of the things I really wonder about plastic surgery is the pain. You know, even procedures that sound kind of minor have risk and have pain afterwards. And it just strikes me that people now are willing to take so much medical risk and subject themselves to so much pain just on the hopes that they're going to look better and be more attractive to other people.
Mm-hmm. It's I must tell you, I mean, of the two surgical procedures I had, having liposuction was extremely painful. I wasn't prepared for the pain. And I wasn't prepared for the shame of it either. I felt really guilty about it because it cost several thousand dollars. And that's money that could have gone to something a lot better. And it was extremely painful.
Would you describe the procedure? Just give
us
a basic overview of it.
The surgeon puts you under, and I remember being very surprised that they positioned me on the operating table face down, because I thought, well, you know, I should be like Deborah Winger in Terms of Endearment, you know, sort of supine on a bed looking upward, or like in an episode of ER. But of course, you know, they needed the work site, you know, at hand, so which was my posterior. So I was face down. The surgeon, the anesthesiologist, puts you under. The surgeon takes a cannula, which is something that looks like a knitting needle, but with a hole at the end, and that's attached to a vacuum device. And then entering in just one hole in your, let's say, right buttock, suctions away fat. And in my case, it wasn't a huge quantity of fat, but my plastic surgeon did tell me on days that she has a lot of liposuction surgeries scheduled, she never goes to the gym because she works with such vigor and such intensity and such brutality on the body that she burns thousands of calories. And I thought, my God, I can't believe, you know, you're doing this with such force that you're burning calories by doing this. It's not a delicate procedure by any means.
You say you think one of the reasons why the cosmetic surgery industry is flourishing is because of the manner in which we pay for health care. What's the connection between health insurance and the cosmetic surgery industry flourishing?
Well, what's fascinating is that, you know, in the early 90s, the healthcare industry was restructured in terms of insurance, and you had the rise of the HMO. A lot of doctors have decided they hate dealing with what's become an increasingly complex insurance reimbursement plan. So if you have an MD, you can practice you can call yourself a cosmetic surgeon. You know, a gastroenterologist can take a weekend seminar in liposuction and say, I'm a cosmetic surgeon now. it doesn't go the other way. You know, a gastroenterologist can't say, I think I'll just do cataract surgery now. Well, he's not certified to do that. So no insurance company will pay him to do that. But on the other hand, you know, cosmetic surgery is paid over the counter. It's cash up front. And so there is no insurance hassle. I've met heart surgeons who quit heart surgery to become cosmetic surgeons. And they're not members of the American Board of Plastic Surgery, but they are, you know, perfectly good doctors.
My guest is Alex Kuczynski. Her new book about the cosmetic surgery industry is called Beauty Junkies. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Alex Kuczynski, and she writes for the Thursday Style section of the New York Times. She has a new book about cosmetic surgery that's called Beauty Junkies. Don't take this the wrong way. I don't mean this as like a personal affront or anything, but do you ever feel like a fake because you know part of your face and part of your body were sculpted by surgeons and that they're not what is naturally yours?
That's interesting. And I don't take affront to that. Do I feel like a fake? I would imagine, I think my most honest answer would be, yes, I feel part of me is fake. My eyelids are fake. And yet, in every reality show and with every patient I interviewed, people uniformly responded, I don't feel like a fake. I feel more like the real me that God intended me to be. People really fixate on this notion of what they want to look like and fasten upon that as this ideal. And when they get there, they think, this is the real me, because the real me is not wrinkled and old-looking. The real me doesn't have saggy breasts. The real me doesn't have a droopy rear end. The real me has perky breasts and bright eyes and big white teeth. And the real me looks young and hopeful. And there is... people cannot abandon that notion of the real me. I mean, I think I will be the only person on the planet who's had cosmetic surgery who will say, yes, I feel part of me is fake, but not that much of me is fake, so I don't feel too bad about it.
You know, as we've said, one of the procedures that you had done was you got your lips poofed.
Yes.
And you had real trouble with that afterwards. What is the procedure and what were the problems you ran into?
It was something that I had read about. It was a filler that is made of hyaluronic acid, a form of synthetic hyaluronic acid. Hyaluronic acid is the kind of, it's an acid that is, it's a substance that's found in rooster combs. It's a kind of gelatinous substance that had previously been used to treat athletes, you know, to make their joints better lubricated. And a company hit upon the idea that it could be used in a synthetic form to plump up lips or, again, the ever-deepening nasolabial folds of the human face, you know, or acne scars or what have you. And I had never tried it. And I, again, went to my plastic surgeon and I said, I want to try this. And she said, you really don't need it. Your lips are fine. And I actually look at my lips today and I think, why would I ever have thought to put something in my lips? And the substance had been approved for use in the face, but not in the lips. It's perfectly legal to use substances, in what the FDA calls an off-label manner. You know, if it's been approved by the FDA for one use, doctors are able to use it to address another issue, you know? I said, let's try it in my lips. It should work really well. Anyway, long story short, it turns out that patients who, you know, are sensitive in the lip area, you know, should take steroids for several days before having this substance put in the lip area. And so my lips swelled up to the size of a yam. And my doctor put me on steroids and sent me home with steroid cream, and I couldn't leave the house for 4 days. And then finally, when my lip returned to sort of a semi-normal lip, the skin, which had been stretched so tight, fell off in little thin slivers over the course of about a week. And it was really, you know, a horrifying experience.
And how do your lips look now?
Well, they're normal. I haven't done anything to them since that, and that was 3 years ago.
But you still have the stuff in there. You didn't get it taken out.
Well, no, the stuff is eventually absorbed by the human, by the body.
Okay.
So it's something like Botox or collagen. I've had collagen a couple of times. I've had fascia, which is a form of collagen derived from cadavers, also put into my face. This was many years ago. And that, it is absorbed by the body.
May I just interject a wow in there?
Yeah. Oh, the cadavers.
The cadavers, yeah. Wow. So, yeah. So what was the moral of the story when your lips kind of poofed to the size of a yam?
Well, I mean, the moral was I looked skyward and said, I am a jerk, I have hit rock bottom, because I had kept the appointment. I had gone to the funeral of a very close friend of mine, and there was a reception afterwards, and I thought, well, and we were going to make some remarks there, and somebody said, you should stand up and make a toast. I said, fine, I will, but on my way, I'm just going to stop in at the doctor because I have this appointment and I really don't want to miss it. And it'll only take like 10 minutes. And by the way, I'll look really great by the time I get to the funeral reception. So, of course, I couldn't go. And, I thought of my friend Jerry, staring down at me or up at me from wherever he was. And I thought Jerry would say to me, you're a complete and total and utter jerk. And I can't ever believe you were my friend. And I hope you write about this so people realize what a fool you were.
So would you ever get anything on your face done again?
My immediate answer is no. And I hope never to have to ever again. I'll never say never.
Right.
I'll never get breast implants, but hopefully I'll never have breast cancer and have to have a reconstruction, but hopefully I'll never have anything done on my face again.
Well, Alex Kuczynski, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Alex Kuczynski reports for the New York Times style section. Her new book is called Beauty Junkies.